want to talk about specific issues with e-discovery, like direct access to storage devices, talking about the form through which you request your e-discovery, talk about federal rules, Texas rules, how they compare, look at metadata and a lot of these different things. But before we kind of get into some of those details, I think it's helpful to appreciate a little bit of the history and context. I think we kind of sometimes take for granted the current state of play when it comes to our discovery rules and the policies that they promote. But, you know, for me, it's helpful to remind yourself that it doesn't have to be this way. And the reason why things are the way that they are is because of the history and, you know, the mindsets that have been entrenched over time. So kind of going back to 1938 and actually before 1938, and I'm pretty confident that there's no one in here that was practicing law before 1938. But basically, believe it or not, there was a time when there was actually no discovery. For us, that's a pretty foreign concept, but, you know, there was a time, basically, mainly because there wasn't as much information to discover, when you didn't have discovery rules. Basically, the system was set up on trial admissibility, so you'd show up to court and you'd have your documents. The other side wouldn't have seen them. You know, you wouldn't have been preparing your witnesses with these documents, and it was basically you show up on that day and you run with what you've got. Kind of along with that sort of limited discovery concept, you also had a pleading system that was very different than what we have today, and it was a very technical form of pleading. You're following statutes, you know, following very precise rules. You have to, you know, cross all your T's and dot all your I's. And so you have basically a system with very restrictive pleading requirements. That's kind of a barrier to entry to the courtroom. And then also you've got, at the same time, a very limited discovery system. So a very different system than what you have today, and it's going to lead to different outcomes. You know, there's pros and cons to all these different systems, but I think for this particular, you know, pre-1938 system, you're looking at a policy of form over truth. And truth, by just, I mean, you know, are we trying to get as much information as possible, or are we trying to, you know, promote other ideas like efficiency, finality, procedure? At that time, it really was more about those ideas rather than making sure that every litigant had access to every piece of information in order to try their case and get a resolution of their matter. The results of that, obviously, is you've got a lot of procedural defaults. You've got resolution on pleading technicalities. And as in a general sense, it's going to favor, you know, the more sophisticated parties, people who have the lawyers that know how these you know, statutes are drawn and how the codes work. It's not going to be something where you can come in as a, you know, just a regular Joe who has a claim and try to file a lawsuit, because you're going to get kicked out because you didn't know how to, you know, cross all your T's and dot all your I's. And so in a certain sense, I think there was an appreciation that you weren't necessarily getting to the truth of the matter. Not everybody was getting their full day in court, so to speak. A little bit of a, you know, Clint Eastwood Wild West attitude, where, you know, the truth and what you deserve maybe wasn't the number one goal. There were other goals at stake. So when you get to 1938, there's a big change in the federal rules to kind of deal with this sort of the trend lines at that time that had been happening. And the big change was that they moved away from the very technical, statutory-based, code-based pleading system, and you moved to a notice-based pleading system. And so basically all you have to do is let the other side know, you know, the conduct giving rise to your claim. And so there's kind of a shift in the policies that they were trying to promote. So instead of the sort of rule-based, you know, finality and efficiency, I think there was really more of a focus on letting parties have their day in court with more information at their disposal, promoting access to the courts, or reducing those barriers to entry to the courtroom, and also a focus on, you know, the truth in the sense of more information, more discovery. So again, so you have sort of a truth focus over the form focus, embodied here by Tom, demanding the truth very, very aggressively. And so, yeah, kind of building off that, the pleading changes and the pleading ideas, it kind of goes hand in hand with the discovery. So when you change the pleading standards and you kind of liberalize those pleading standards in a sense, you kind of, on the flip side, also kind of open up discovery. So it's all about basically very limited pleading, you know, just a very basic notice of your claim. And then from there, you can have a very open discovery system where you have access to information and in a sense get to gather information about those claims that you've asserted. And the other component of that at the time was that essentially for when we're talking about the scope of discovery and, you know, what, you know, the discoverability was premised almost essentially entirely on relevance. So the mindset at the time was if it's relevant, then it's discoverable. And this is, you know, a pretty important kind of mindset that I think gets entrenched starting at this time. And really, over the next few decades, that's the standard. Relevance, discoverability go hand in hand. And that's how people looked at litigation. That's how people looked at discovery.